Will there be a new awakening in 2026? Our next guest, Kirk Nelson, believes so. And what does that mean to all of us? 2026, not that far away. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, let's let our minds wander for the next couple hours. Kirk Nelson with us. He's been a student of prophecy for more than 30 years. His specialty is the effect of planetary influences on world affairs. He's the author of 3 books on prophecy, astrology, and even the life of Jesus. He has lectured in more than 50 cities in the United States and Canada, has appeared all over the media. We're talking about 2026. And Kirk, welcome to Coast, my friend. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, George.
I'm fascinated by this planetary effect on world affairs. They're just talking about another little planetoid that they have found way out there in the solar system, smaller than Pluto. These things just keep popping up, don't they?
They do indeed. Planets and planetoids keep being discovered.
Let's talk, Kirk, a little bit about you first before we get into this incredible work you've been doing. How did you get involved in this?
Well, when I was in college, I went to the University of Georgia bookstore to find the best book I could find on psychic phenomena. And I remember very clearly looking at all the books there, and the book that I chose was Jess Stern's book, The Sleeping Prophet, on Edgar Cayce. So I read about Edgar Cayce and just became fascinated with him and read everything I could find on Edgar Cayce.
I was like you. As a youngster, I got these Cayce stories and books, and I just couldn't put them down. I mean, every story was better than the next, wasn't it?
Yes, it's true. It's an amazing story.
And you're out that way, aren't you, where the Cayce Foundation is?
Yeah, I live in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
You're right there. I mean, do you have a working relationship with them?
I do. I've lectured there for years. My books have been published by them, although I'm doing them myself now. I've been around ARE for a long time.
Good people, aren't they?
Very much so.
The Cayce Foundation has been, I think, so helpful to so many people, both in health remedies and other episodes. He was just one of a kind, wasn't he?
He really was. He had the ability to go into trance, and just being given the name and the address of the individual, he could give them a psychic medical diagnosis that was accurate. And in some cases, better than what the doctors would give.
Yeah, that's true. I've got, back in Los Angeles, I've got a book that was written about the Cayce trance readings as they directly related to health. Uh-huh. And you read them, and this is like in the 40s, right? And you read them and look at modern medicine today, the guy was right on, if not better.
Yeah, it's actually farther back than that, from the early 1900s up to the 40s. In fact, Cayce's abilities were so amazing that he was on the cover of the New York Times in 1910.
Jeez.
But to me, the thing that I've always thought was most remarkable about the medical readings was that Cayce said that if you ate 3 almonds a day,
that's right,
that was the best preventative for cancer.
I will always remember that. And I do that. I take a lot of things, turmeric and things like that, but I take 3 unsalted almonds a day.
Yeah, and
I'm still here.
Of all the things in the Cayce readings, I would say that was probably the most valuable piece of information.
I think so too. What other prophecies that Edgar Cayce had that you have found to be fascinating?
Well, one of the things that I've become fascinated with recently, a lot of Cayce's prophecies mirrored the prophecies in the Bible. For instance, Cayce predicted that there would be 1,000 years of peace, that Jesus would return, and that the sun and the moon would be darkened, which are 3 of the big prophecies that you see in the Bible. Now, what's fascinated me lately is that Cayce talked about that there would be a pole shift, or that the poles would be shifting. And he said that this would begin in the period 58 to 98. And then he went on to describe a series of earth changes that involved Florida being underwater, South Georgia and South Carolina, or the South Carolinas being underwater, and that the coastlines of many nations would disappear. And it seemed to me in reading this that this very much paralleled global warming, because everything that he talked about are the predictions that we see with the sea level rises with global warming. And in fact, in some readings, he said that this would be a gradual, not a cataclysmic change during this period. And of course, the period from 58 to 1998, 40% of the North Polar ice cap melted during that period. So we truly had a shifting of the poles as far as that goes. Now, there are other Casey readings that talk about a pole shift more in terms of an axis shift. We also know that currently we're in the middle of a magnetic pole shift. This is what scientists tell us, that what happens when you have a magnetic pole shift is at first the magnetic field around the Earth drops to zero, and then the poles reverse polarity. Not an axis shift, but the magnetic poles. And what has happened recently is that the magnetic field of the Earth has begun to decay in a much faster rate than scientists realize. So they think that this magnetic pole shift is going to occur faster than they thought it was originally. Mm-hmm. Now, they don't have a timetable because we've never experienced this before in human history. But we know for a fact that this is actually occurring from scientific evidence.
Tell me a little bit about your book, 2026, and the significance of the cover with the Sphinx and the Great Pyramids up there.
Well, one of the great things about the Casey readings, now, in my work, what I always try to do is I try to go where the facts lead me, but no farther. I want to have proof of anything that anybody says, whether it be talking about Casey's prophecies, Casey's readings, UFOs, whatever you're talking about. I want to go just as far as the facts lead me. Now, one of the great things about Casey's prophecies is that he gave prophecies about the Giza Plateau, specifically the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx. And the wonderful thing about that is that you can talk about all these things that we talk about that we're all interested in, mysticism, metaphysics, like I said, UFOs, all these things. But the great thing about Egypt is it's there, it's physical. We can study it, and we can determine whether, for instance, Casey was correct in the things that he said about the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx. Now, first of all, Casey said that the large pyramids, or the Great Pyramid specifically, was not a tomb. It was a temple of initiation, and that both Jesus and John the Baptist went through an initiation in the Great Pyramid. Now, there have never been any burials of pharaohs found in any of the large pyramids. And in spite of this, Egyptologists tell us that these are all tombs.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's no indication that they're tombs. And when the explorers found the King's Chamber in the 1800s, they blasted through a 24-foot granite plug with dynamite to get to the King's Chamber, and when the so-called King's Chamber. And when they got there, the sarcophagus was empty. And so it was not a tomb. There was a great moment that we had at ARE when Zahi Awas, the...
good old Zahi, the former antiquities leader. Huh?
Yes, exactly. When he came to speak, a little old lady came to the microphone to ask him a question. And she said, have there ever been any indigenous burials found in any of the large pyramids? And he said, no. And she said, well, then they're not tombs, are they?
Oh, I bet he hated that.
Oh, it was, she should have dropped the mic at that point, right?
Did he get rude with her?
No, no, no.
Okay.
He was very nice. He
All
was
right.
very nice. But the point is, she just destroyed all of Egyptology with one question. I mean, it was extraordinary. But now, getting back to the Giza Plateau, the Casey said that there was a hall of records, an ancient repository of knowledge, placed beneath the Sphinx, and that it was placed there 12,000 years ago by the survivors of the sinking of Atlantis, and that this repository of knowledge contained a history of the human race from the beginning, he said, 10 million years ago, to that time, including the story of Atlantis and everything that had occurred up until then. He said that this repository of knowledge was placed there to be discovered during our time. Now, he said that the entrance to this Hall of Records was by the right front forepaw of the Sphinx, that there were underground passages there that led from the right front forepaw to this so-called Hall of Records, which was between the Sphinx and the river. Now, in the 1970s, Stanford Research Institute did soundings under the right front forepaw.
I think, wasn't Robert Schrock part of that?
No, he was not. This was before Robert Schrock.
Okay.
I'll get to him in a minute.
But, okay.
The soundings, they did soundings of the right front forepaw, and what they found was that there were that the right front forepaw was clear all the way down the front forepaw. There were no passages under the right front forepaw, but when you got to the end of the front forepaw, there's a little, not a little, but a like a 6-7 foot box of stones there. And under that box of stones, they found that it was dead in three places, indicating that there were passages under this box of stones. Mm-hmm. And in doing my research for my first book, I found a Egyptian legend that an Egyptian pharaoh had this box of stones dismantled, and they found an entrance under the Sphinx. And so he sent two of his men under into the passageway, and they came out covered with sores. So he rebuilt the box of stones and placed a statue of the god of the underworld on top of this box. And when the Sphinx was uncovered from the sand in the 1920s, they found a broken statue of the god of the underworld on top of this box. Now, in addition to that, Casey said that there were records as to who built the Sphinx and why by the left hindquarters of the Sphinx. And by the left hindquarters of the Sphinx, there is a box identical to this box by the right front forepaw.
That alone is amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's truly amazing. So I believe that that's where the entrance to the Hall of Records is located.
Now, Casey said that they could have been in three spots, Central America, near Bimini, and then definitely at the foot of the Sphinx. So he believes they were in three areas. We're honing in, of course, on the Sphinx. It seems to be the easier place to spot.
Oh, no question, no question. Now, I'm going to can I go ahead and tell you the story of the discovery that I made?
Yes, please.
Okay. Back in March, I called my literary agent, and just as a friendly call, you know, I had nothing in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we chatted for a little while, and then she said, "I thought you called me because you wanted to write a book." And I said, "Well, actually, I did want to write a book. I want to write a book entitled How to Be Rich, Happy, and Thin." And she laughed at me derisively. So I said, "Okay, well, what kind of book do you want me to write?"
But you were serious, weren't you?
Oh, I was dead serious. I already have the notes. I have the notes on. So she said, I said, what kind of book do you want me to write? And she said, well, something that's out there, something that's on the edge of knowledge, that's really way out there. And I said, oh, I can do that. And I said, I'll just write a book on prophecy. I'll rewrite my original book on prophecy because I've got some new information.
Uh-huh.
And stuff. So I went ahead and wrote the book. I got down to the last page of the last chapter on the last afternoon that I was going to work on the book. And I decided to take a break. I thought, well, I'll watch some TV or something. And I found that I had a lecture on DVD of Graham Hancock's.
Okay, great.
On the on megalithic sites. And I thought, oh, well, I'll take a look at this. Maybe there's something in here that I can learn from, you know. So I put it on, and he started talking about the Sphinx. And he started talking about how he got permission from the Egyptian government to get up on the back of the Sphinx and take a photograph at sunrise on the equinox. And I thought, wow, that must have taken some influence to be able to get up on the back of the Sphinx. But anyway, he showed this photograph, and he showed that the Sphinx was perfectly aligned with the sun on the equinox. Only two times a year is it perfectly aligned with the sun,
huh.
Spring and fall equinox. So I thought, well, that's amazing. And the thing that blew me away about this is that in preparation for writing the book on prophecy, I had looked at the astrology of the next 35 years, and I had discovered that there were two time periods, or the two best times astrologically in the next 25 or 35 years were the spring equinox 2026 and August of 2026, and that the best time for the spring equinox was the sunrise of 2026. There's a huge alignment of planets on the sunrise of 2026. Now, this is all part of a bigger picture, and that is that between 2024 and 2027, we have the best astrological aspects of the next 35 years. And the reason for that is that Uranus and Neptune move very slowly through the zodiac, and they are only lined up together every 30 years or so. So the aspects for this 2024-2027 period are extremely rare and extremely powerful because you have these two large planets lined up together for about 3 or 4 years.
Could that affect us?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The effect is tremendous. Uranus is the psychic. Neptune is the mystic. So it's an aspect for, and Uranus is also the extreme, so it's an aspect for extreme opening of spiritual awareness. And what happens in 2026 is that Saturn joins that party, and Saturn is changed.
Hold on for a second, Kurt. We'll come right back and talk more about this, your work 2026, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Back with Kirk Nelson in his book 2026, and we're going to be talking about some of the prophecies of the Great Pyramids and what it means to all of us. So, Kirk, back to these planetary alignments that happen every once in a blue moon. What does that mean for us?
Well, it's a great opening of awareness for the people of Earth, a realization of the spiritual aspects of reality. And I was talking about 2026 in the spring equinox. What happens is you have the sun, the moon, Venus, Saturn, and Uranus, and Neptune all conjunct, all coming over the horizon at dawn on the spring equinox of 2026. And when you have Saturn, which is the builder, with Uranus and Neptune, it is the physical manifestation of spiritual ideals. When I discovered this particular date and this particular aspect, the first thing that I did was I looked back to see when was the last time we had these kinds of aspects. And what I discovered was that the last time that we had these aspects was November of 1989. Now, do you know what happened in November of 1989?
November 1989. Was it a stock market crash?
No, the Berlin Wall fell.
Ah, something crashed.
Yeah, the Berlin Wall fell, and in addition to that, UFOs appeared over Belgium, and thousands of people saw these UFOs. They were there for 4 months. Not a peep about it in the American press, but it was just the most unbelievable wave of UFO sightings in world history, probably. I mean, they were there for a long time. They showed up on radar. The Belgian Air Force chased them.
Never caught them.
No, never caught them. but just an incredible appearance of UFOs. So I thought, wow, that's amazing. Maybe this will be the opening of the Hall of Records and UFOs and political changes and all these sorts of things. So then, when I discovered that what Graham Hancock was talking about, that the Sphinx lined up perfectly with the sun on the spring equinox, I thought, wow, this is an amazing story. But then I found out something even more amazing. About a week later, I once again was thinking about, oh, I just need something to watch. So I turned on Ancient Aliens, and they were talking about the Great Pyramid. And they were talking about how the Great Pyramid had 8 sides. And I was like, what? I never knew that the Great Pyramid had 8 sides. Each side, what we call a side, is actually indented 1%. And it's not something that you can see. Normally, you can see looking at the Great Pyramid. And the way that they discovered this was that in the fall of 1940, a British military plane flew over the Great Pyramid at sunset on the equinox.
The shadows did it, right?
Exactly. Yep. And a shadow appeared on the Great Pyramid. It's the only time this shadow appears is at sunrise and sunset on the equinoxes. And it was the only way that you could tell that it actually has 8 sides. So when I saw this, I immediately leapt up and realized the significance of it. I was so excited because Casey said that the Great Pyramid was built as prophecy in stone, and that some of these prophecies were correct as to the hour, day, place, and individuals involved. So I turned that into a question. How do you build a monument to it? Indicate an exact hour and day 12,000 years into the future? Well, you indent the sides 1% such that a shadow only appears at sunrise and sunset on the equinox.
And it has to be positioned perfectly, doesn't it?
Exactly. So I thought, okay, they built the Great Pyramid to tell us that something is going to happen at some sunrise or sunset on the equinoxes, one of the equinoxes, in the future.
And we're getting close to that future, aren't we, Kirk?
Yes. And, of course, I had already identified the sunrise spring equinox 2026 as one of the two most extraordinary astrological aspects of the next 35 years. So I believe that something is going to happen at that day and time. Now, this is all very interesting, but once again, another week went by, and I thought, well, maybe there's some more information in that photograph that I have missed. So I went back and I looked at the photograph, and I literally took a business card and I lined it up with the shadow of the second pyramid. And the shadow of the second pyramid at sunrise and sunset on the equinox points directly to that right front forepaw box of the Sphinx. you know, where we think the entrance to the Hall of Records is located. So I believe they're telling us that at some future equinox that the entrance to the Hall of Records would be opened by literally pointing the shadow of the second large pyramid directly to the right front forepaw box.
This, in the prophecy itself, is there anything, you know, because so many prophetic people tell us doom and gloom. Is there anything positive here?
Well, there is, but I want to make one more point about the Sphinx, and that is that there is there's a stela between the two front forepaws of the Sphinx. And on that stela, there are two Sphinxes back-to-back. And the two Sphinxes back-to-back are the Egyptian god Ruti, R-U-T-I. And this was the double lion god. And the double lion god, Ruti, sat at the entrance to the underworld and guarded the horizon. And that's exactly what the Sphinx does. The Sphinx sits at the entrance to the Hall of
Records. And it was once a lion's head, too, I think.
Yes, but it definitely seems to have been recarved. Whether it was a human head or a lion head, I don't know, but it's definitely been recarved. But anyway, I just wanted to get that in there because I thought that was amazing that there is this Egyptian god which basically describes what the Sphinx itself does.
Now let's talk about the prophecy. The prophecy based on the pyramids and what's there. What do you think is happening around 2026?
Well, you know, there's the whole series of prophecies that Jesus gave that there would. Jesus gives the prophecy in Matthew 24. He refers to Daniel word for word. He specifically quotes Daniel. Daniel describes this invasion of the Middle East and that there would be this invasion of the Middle East and that then there would be what he called the Great Tribulation, which is a time of trouble such that we have never seen before. And that this time of trouble would be followed by the darkening of the sun and the moon, and then the return of Jesus and the 1,000 years of peace. So that's the brief outline of the prophetic events which we can expect, I think, during that time period.
Well, and let's assume it's starting now.
Well, if you want to talk about what's going on now, over the past few years, one of the things that I've discovered is that you can actually predict the future using astrology. But the way that you do it is astrology only works in aggregate. In other words, it only works when there are large groupings of planets in either good or bad aspects. For instance, I'll give you a couple of examples. In the spring of 1941, we had the worst astrological aspects of the 20th century. We had all of these planets were square Mars, which is the god of war. And the worst day during that time period was May 10th, 1941. And on May 10th, 1941, we had the worst bombing raid of the war in London. The Germans dropped incendiary bombs. It burned probably a quarter, a third of the city.
And V-2s too, probably.
No, V-2s came later. They hadn't quite developed those yet. But and plus, if you look at the 20th century, that's probably the low point of the 20th century. Stalin was in charge in Russia. The Germans had conquered Europe. England was alone against Germany. America had not gotten into the war. Really the low point of civilization for the 20th century. So, and then, of course, we have the flip side of that being November of 1989, the sudden fall of the Berlin Wall, et cetera, and all that. Anyway, so what's happening now is the United States has gone through a period of extraordinarily positive astrological aspects. We have this Sun, Trine, Neptune aspect. So the Neptune has to do with liquids such as oil, water, you know, the oceans, that sort of thing. So we have low energy prices, we have low unemployment, we have low interest rates, we have low inflation, and we have high commodity or high asset values all at the same time. It's like the perfect storm for the economy. The last time we had this type of situation was the early 1960s, when we had the exact same astrological aspect for the United States. Now, this is not going to last. It will last for another 3 or 4 years. We will have these low energy prices. Mm-hmm. We're going to have the oil flowing for a while.
Sure.
But one of the things that I wanted to talk about is that the United States in its chart has a very violent aspect in its chart. And this violent aspect is activated only during certain times. And two of those times were 9/11 and December 7th, 1941.
Does it show any more violent times ahead?
It does.
Oh, boy.
And these violent times start in December of this year and continue for about 4 months until the end of March, but particularly in December of this year. And, you know, I hate to say that it predicts a terrorist attack or whatever, but I'll just say that it seems like a likely possibility sometime during that time period.
How do we know it's not, you know, some kind of natural tragedy?
We don't. And I'm not going to pretend to be able to predict the exact future. But you can see these aspects and how they affect us. Now, there's another aspect to this where, you know, we ourselves will take some violent action. But, you know, it's amazing how accurate this is throughout history. Now, there's a very similar aspect in June. You know, you could say June of every year, but the aspects in June are violent, but they are victories for the United States, such as D-Day, Midway, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, you talked about, Kirk, a darkening of the sun and moon. Now, to me, that sounds like some kind of volcanic action.
Yes. Yeah, so, well, there's several possibilities. It could be volcanoes. Earthquakes throw up dust, which can darken the sun and the moon. If there is a magnetic field reversal, which we actually know is already occurring or in the process of occurring, we don't know what the effects of that will be. So there's a lot of different things. If there's a polar axis shift, of course, that could cause something like that. So there's a lot of different possibilities, but, you know, we just don't know. Now, in looking at the astrology of the next 35 years, the most likely possibility for, you know, if you want to say bad times, tribulation, whatever you want to call it, would be in December of 2025. There are some very negative aspects during that time period. In addition...
10 years from now. We'll worry about it later. It's 10 years from now, right?
Yes,
we'll worry about
exactly.
That.
Exactly. In addition to that, you know, it looks like the U.S. has these low oil prices for the next 3 or 4 years, very good for us. But after that, there's an aspect in the 2020s, which is very similar in some ways to the late 60s, where it's a very warlike aspect for the United States and involves Neptune, which is oil, which is the ocean. And so we're seeing, you know, these tensions with China in the South China Sea with the United States, possibility there. And also, of course, you know, the Middle East, all these problems involved with the Middle East. So it looks like during that 2020s time period, the U.S. will be probably involved in, you know, war again, as we usually are, but in a more serious way than we are right now.
Kirk, does Edgar Cayce echo at all the Book of Revelation?
Well, what Cayce says about the Book of Revelation is that the Book of Revelation is symbolic of the physical raising of energy through Kundalini. That Revelation is more symbolic, whereas some of the other prophecies in the Bible are more literal. In other words, in the book of Revelation, they're talking constantly talking about sevens. There's seven lamps, there's seven lights, there are all these different sevens mentioned in the book of Revelation. And Casey said that that was symbolic of the raising of Kundalini through the seven endocrine centers of the human body. He referred to Ecclesiastes talks about the silver cord. And Casey said that this was the Kundalini energy that runs through the human body that can be raised through meditation and prayer.
That's the cord you see when you astral project. That's connecting you and the astral plane together.
Yes. And one of the things about this is that I believe that this electrical, there's a direct current that runs through the human body, not through the neurons, but through those sheathing cells. And this direct current moves at 99% of the speed of light. And as you approach the speed of light, time slows down. As you reach the speed of light, time stands still. This has been proven by...
And as you go past the speed of light?
Perhaps you go back in time.
Maybe.
But this has been proven that time slows down. So the human brain, and this is my own thinking, the human brain is a valve that slows the soul down enough to enter physical consciousness.
Kirk, stay with us. We're going to hit the break, but we're going to come back and take calls and talk more. Plus, you say there's an extraterrestrial role somewhere around 2026, that awakening time period. I want to talk with you about that as well. So we'll be back in a moment. Kirk Nelson with us, the name of his book, 2026, website linked up at coasttocoastam.com.